Welcome to the first ever Carmelloni COVID cast. I'm Matthew Berkowitz, and with me is Brian O'Shea. And we're going to discuss a number of legal issues, primarily from the standpoint of the class action litigation in light of COVID-19. Today, we're going to be specifically focusing on some of the class action lawsuits that we are seeing and will continue to see over the coming months against retailers and grocers arising out of coronavirus exposure. Brian, I want you to turn it over to you and talk about some of the lawsuits that you have been seeing recently from consumers against grocers and retailers.
Well, I think it's important to note that every single industry, as the as life eventually gets back to normal, every single industry is going to likely be touched by some sort of coronavirus-related litigation. Right now, what we're seeing is that retailers of all types, the ones that are, of course, open right now, and grocers as well, are in a unique position compared to other businesses, especially those that are deemed essential services. People are alleging that as they go into these businesses, as they go into their local grocery stores, they're coming out and sometime after feeling sick and are pointing to places that they've been. And one place that everyone is going right now is the grocery store. And these retailers and stores have put a lot of precautions in place to mitigate against the risk of people falling ill and of potential litigation as well. But with something like coronavirus, there's only so much that can be done. So we're starting to
here's my question, Brian. Yes. Though, and this is where I think is the defense of these lawsuits is the whole idea of causation. Now, hey, tell me if you disagree with me, but do you see plaintiffs being able to, because obviously a plaintiff's got to prove that they got coronavirus and then be able to link their illness to the exposure at the grocery store? How can they prove that they were exposed at the grocery store? I mean, are you in agreement that that's going to be difficult, or do you think you disagree?
I'm in agreement that it's going to be difficult, but I don't necessarily think it's impossible to prove. You're going to need to, an expert will say almost anything. That's the dirty little secret of litigation. But definitely causation is a very solid defense when you're faced with a regular lawsuit or traditional lawsuit or a class action lawsuit. In order to obtain relief, a plaintiff will need to show, if the plaintiff sues the grocery store, that I most likely got coronavirus from this grocery store. And with coronavirus being as widespread as it is, if that plaintiff was anywhere else in public or interacted with people at any other location, or arguably the plaintiff could have gotten coronavirus from an innumerable number of different locations where that person has been. So it'll be very difficult to prove that the plaintiff got coronavirus at the grocery store.
I'm going to take the flip side though. All right. Most people, they're on lockdown. Okay. They're working from home. They're not going anywhere. And the only place they're going every few days is their local grocery store. Wouldn't that testimony by itself, forget the whole thing about the expert, does that create an issue? I mean, does that change your opinion now at some point that you get the testimony from plaintiffs that say, I haven't been anywhere else but the grocery store? Do you believe that's a problem?
Well, it could be, depending on, if a case like this were to go to trial, depending on what the jury makeup is like and what they believe. But even if you're dealing with a plaintiff who spent most of his time in a single home, even alone, I still think that the causation defense is a strong one. I mean, this is an airborne virus from everything we've been told, and you can potentially get it from someone who is not carrying symptoms and who is as much as 30 feet away from you. So, I mean, I guess
right,
it's
but
possible.
But he hasn't been anywhere else other than the grocery store. But what about throwing out the other defense of it? I mean, and I think you started to talk about it. Obviously, you have to establish duty, breach, causation, damages. Even on a breach, I mean, the coronavirus and the COVID-19 is so new, is a novel coronavirus, that what breaching the standard of care, what should the grocery store have done differently? What's foreseeable about it? And you were like, what measures should grocery stores and retailers, what should they have known back in March, February, January? If somebody's alleging exposure back then, I think that might also, and I think you were about to touch on that, and we're touching on that earlier. I think, in my opinion, I think also creates a problem for plaintiffs and provides a defense for the retailers and grocers.
Yes, I agree. I think it's hard to say what they should have known back in March or back in February. I mean, much of how coronavirus spreads right now, months later, and we're on the first day of May now, is unknown. So, you know, our knowledge is still limited, but it is better than it was maybe 2 months ago. But yeah, I was trying to touch on this point earlier that yes, that there's only so much that can be done if you're a grocery store. And now, with coronavirus being so universally known and so widespread, that whenever someone goes out to any type of retail establishment, including a grocery store, that person there's a strong argument that that person is assuming the risk of injury. In other words, that person knows what he is getting himself into, that he might get sick, and that there is a risk that there is a patient or a person who is positive for coronavirus in the store.
But see, here's where, and I agree with you, there could be an assumption of risk, but now here's where I think maybe things change a little bit from February, March of 2020 to the president moving forward. You know, the CDC, the government health agencies, they've come out with guidelines. Yes, people know, but at some level, aren't now people expecting that, while maybe they are assuming the risk, aren't they expecting that if they're going to the grocery store, that the keypads are wiped down, the carts are wiped down, grocery stores are telling people, or the health agencies are telling, and certain counties are saying no more than X number of people in the grocery store, nobody should be in there with a mask. So if I'm a consumer, I'm going to the grocery store, I'm expecting that the number of people are limited, number one. Number two, I'm expecting things are wiped down. I'm expecting that because of that people are wearing masks. I think maybe something changes. I can see the lawsuit type of coming where a plaintiff walks into a grocery store, goes to the grocery store, alleges they were contaminated there, and then alleges, you know what, here's the breach. People weren't wearing a mask, weren't wearing masks. The store knew about it, and they weren't enforcing it. And that almost, to me, that becomes almost analogous to the slip and fall that, hey, you know of the water spill, and you're not putting out the warning sign. You're not enforcing it. That's just my take. I don't know if you have the similar thoughts on that, Brian.
Well, yes, I think certainly in order to mitigate both the health risks and the risk of litigation, stores should be taking, that are open right now, should be taking common sense steps like social distancing within the store, limiting the number of people that are in the store, wiping down grocery carts and things like that in order to potentially avoid legal risks. But I still think it's going to be difficult, and I still think it's a good argument from a defense standpoint to argue that is there proof or there is no proof that you got coronavirus because, for example, I did not wipe down this grocery cart. You could have gotten it from any number of different places, such as your car keys, your cell, you know, the surface of your cell phone, countless different hard surfaces that you might have touched over the course of a day, or even if you walked by someone on the sidewalk, as I was saying before, that if you're outside walking your dog, you could have got coronavirus there as well. Experts have said that you certainly do not need to touch a hard surface in order to get coronavirus. So, yes, that's definitely an argument that a plaintiff can make, and it might work. Depending on what the makeup of the jury is like, if this case were to go to trial. But I certainly do not think it's a slam dunk, and I think that the defense still might have the upper hand from the causation standpoint.
No, and I think I agree with you, and we're kind of merging a lot of what I was throwing out was food for thoughts and certainly considerations that plaintiff's counsel will argue. And I tend to agree that and just kind of wrap it up that, look, there are things that are known now, that suggestions that have been given by health experts to grocers and retailers, as you pointed out, about wiping down, enforcing social distancing, those things. And if those things are done, I think it becomes defensible. And then furthermore, I think it becomes the causation becomes very, very difficult because it is so widespread. It becomes very difficult to be able to pinpoint. And because it has a long incubation period, it does become so difficult to pinpoint when exactly the exposure took place. And just changing topics in the last 3 minutes or so, just on the class action standpoint, to me, because we're talking about all these uncertainties, obviously, to establish a class action, to get a class certified, because I do see a number of these suits being filed by a class of plaintiffs. Obviously, you're going to have to establish commonality, that the claims of class members are common, and that there's typicality, which is very similar, that the claims of the lead plaintiffs are typical of that of the class members. Everything, I think, I want you to speak to it too, Brian, but I think everything we've been talking about is that there could be different quote-unquote breaches, different failures by the alleged failures by the retailer that aren't going to be a call it a violation or a breach, different alleged breaches, different reasons for, I guess, exposure could destroy commonality and provide great defenses to defeat class certification.
Yes, I think that's definitely true. Countless different types of breaches could theoretically lead to a positive coronavirus case, and you know, that we were discussing before. I think also another interesting issue is, are you going to have to conduct a series of individual mini inquiries in order to determine whether someone had coronavirus or not? And how certain is it from the testing at this point, whether someone actually has had or does have coronavirus or not? This is beyond my area of expertise, but many of these tests have come back with false positives. So it might be difficult to show, you know, even if you had a coronavirus test, it might raise some doubt, and you tested positive, there still might be some doubt whether you are actually a proper member of the class or not, or whether the class is even certain.
Yeah, and I think going to that point, going to the damages, and even going to a 23B inquiry where you need to produce, plaintiffs needs to establish predominance, that the common questions predominate over the individual ones, especially with respect to damages. Not only are there individual inquiries onto the testing as to who got it, when, and then how, but you know, what were their effects? Different people, you know, somebody may get sick from the virus, and it's certainly unpleasant, but they may have missed, you know, a week of work and had to be at home, maybe similar symptoms to the flu, where you've got others that could result in death or other grave illnesses and the long-term effects of that. But certainly that goes to damages, that goes to the individual inquiries you were talking about. Certainly there are some courts, different circuits treat it differently, but some circuits at that point in time will say no class certification because of these individual inquiries related to damages. And then other courts will say, in the Eastern District of Virginia, in the Fourth Circuit's one that has done this, that may say, okay, we'll certify the common question, whether or not, whether supermarket A breached the standard of care by failing to enforce A, B, and C, but we'll certify it in term for purposes of liability, but then we're going to bifurcate this, and then we'll have the mini trial, so to speak, on the damages. So I could see a court doing it that way as well. And we got about a minute left. I don't know if you had any final thoughts, Brian, on what you expect to see to come over the next several months in terms of lawsuits, class action lawsuits against retailers and grocers as a result of the coronavirus.
Well, the timeline is a little bit uncertain with many courts with just about every court operating under a limited capacity right now. But I think it's pretty clear that we're going to see a flood of class action and traditional lawsuits as well, arising out of coronavirus. And the courts are going to be very busy dealing with this issue for years to come. But I think as a business owner, I think it's important to not panic and to use common sense and take the steps that have been recommended in regards to social distancing, and understand that there are good defenses available to you in the event you are on the wrong side of one of these lawsuits.
All right. I think that's about all the time we have today. We're going to be back again. We'll discuss a similar topic again, but we're going to look at it from the standpoint of some of the class action lawsuits that we anticipate to be filed against the retailers and grocers, not by the public necessarily, but by its own employees, perhaps for failure to have safety measures in place to keep them safe from the virus. So that's all the time we have today, and we look forward to joining us next time.